Good morning, and thank you for a good reading of a long scripture. It's very good to be here with you this morning. And we regularly worship at Sterling, and so we have some exchanges with Pioneer Park in different ways. So it's nice to be here in your building and with you. So this morning, I'm going to share my reflections on Isaac's story, this interesting story. We've been exploring Old Testament stories, and so this is one that I've been wrestling with as I think about some of the current things that I myself am working on in my work. And so I'm going to share some reflections on Isaac's story of being a stranger, settling, conflict, relocating, and then settling again. And I'm going to, in the process, draw in some of my own Mennonite stories alongside these biblical stories as a way to help slow down this story and draw out what might be the voice of God in the story that we can hear and where God is leading. If any of you know Thomas King, he's a well-known novelist, a broadcaster. He's of mixed Cherokee, Greek, and German descent. And he began his 5 Massey lecture series, each of them in 2003, with the very same words. There's a story I know. It's about the earth and how it floats in space on the back of a turtle. And then he modified the details of his story about how the earth was created. And I think King's words are rather appropriate as a preamble for our biblical story today. There's a story I know, and it happened at a well. The Bible is full of stories of things that happen at wells. Important things happened at wells. People met their spouses at wells. There were changes in life plans at wells. Healings happened at wells. So, and more things than just those few things happened at wells. And when I hear Isaac's story of wells, I found my own family Mennonite stories came to mind as I listened to that story slowly, often in a way that seemed to parallel Isaac. Fearful immigrants who understand themselves to be chosen by God, who listen for God's leading and hope to be abundantly blessed in their new place. And so I'm going to share some of my stories, as I said, but with some caution. And I'm cautious for 2 reasons. The first is that my stories are only one small part of the larger Mennonite stories from around the globe. And so I don't want my own stories to say more than they actually do about what it means to be Mennonite. And second, I sometimes worry that when we make comparisons with biblical figures, we seem to suggest that being Mennonite or Christian is the same as being Jewish or an Israelite. And it's important for us, I know, to recognize the uniqueness of the Jewish experience and Jewish history, and so it's not the same. But with these 2 concerns in mind, let me continue. So there's a story I know, and it happened at a well. It's about God and Isaac, settlers and indigenous people, relationships and conflict. And this story actually begins before the part was read with the arrival of a fearful immigrant. And so in this part of the story, in the verses just before we started, there's a famine. Isaac, the herder, needs to bring his family and his flocks to an area where they will survive. And God leads Isaac to Gerar to stay a while. Isaac is fearful, and he has a rocky start, actually. He lies. He says his wife is his sister, a little dubious, and then he's caught in the lie by the king. And yet, despite the lie, Isaac and Rebekah are welcomed and generously protected with an edict from King Abimelech. And he threatens anyone who thinks of touching them, so they're safe. And then, as the story goes, Isaac's fields are blessed 100-fold. When reading this story, I think it's helpful for us to keep in mind today that property was not owned in the way we think of it, and so land served the livelihoods of everyone in the community. Access to land was important given they were semi-nomadic herders. The land was not fenced. It was not kept and sold in perpetuity. Indeed, as God had instructed in Leviticus, Israelites were to steward lands as aliens and tenants. So there's Isaac on land that is his and not his, and this blessing of 100-fold on his crops is astounding. Unbelievable, in fact, is one thing to think about it. And so we are led in the story to understand God's blessing means tremendous prosperity. But I wonder, is it really that simple? And if so, why the conflict that follows? Why the story of conflict with the Philistines over wells? The passage suggests simple jealousy. But here, I think it's helpful to slow down the story and think about the dynamics that might be happening behind the scenes. And to do so, we have to start imagining what might be going on behind the story. And that brings me to my own family stories. And this morning I brought with me part of my family story. It's a big genealogy book called And Johann Begat. And this is the genealogical and family story of my father's side of the family, so it's the Neufeld side. People who arrived as immigrants to safe haven and settled on the prairies in the 1870s. It was given to me by my Neufeld grandparents to help me remember my family story. And so the Mennonites who are in this genealogy, they were immigrants who were afraid. They were hopeful. They wanted to get out of Russia. They thought they were following God's lead. They were very inwardly focused and looking after their survival, protection of themselves, the faith. There were difficult winters and childbirth to survive as they've settled, land to clear, to plow, to plant. And they looked to prosper. They went to church, they visited with their Mennonite neighbors, and they worked hard on what they saw as their own land. And it seems that my forebears generally did not hear or tell the stories of the people around them. The people like the Plains Cree, who were relocated as part of signing the numbered treaties in Western Canada to prepare for European settlers. My immediate family settled in Saskatchewan. And I don't think they paid much mind to the stories of the people that were part of Treaty Number 6, until those stories actually became very real when they bubbled up as conflict in their life, conflict which they couldn't avoid. And so when I read my story alongside Isaac's story, I get into some of the dynamics that might be part of Isaac's story and Isaac's problem of becoming too powerful for the Philistines. The Mennonite immigrants community that I speak of was inwardly facing. It was seeking its own welfare without attending much to what sustained it, what allowed it to thrive. Mennonites in Rostern, for example, didn't take much notice of the treaties that the government had signed, steps that made sure that the immigrants thrived and the indigenous people did not. And people, my people, even once they'd been around for 50 or 60 years, held on to newcomer status in insecurity. And in communities like Rostern and Laird, and I don't know if anyone's visited Rostern or Laird, they're very good communities, but they were inwardly focused, and that unintentionally reinforced poor and problematic relationships with those who were there before them, who were pushed onto living on reserves. And so these immigrants prospered, and they didn't attend to why they prospered, and it fed conflict. Which brings us back to my question of, if God's leading is simply prosperity, why the subsequent conflict that's marked by those filled wells? What is God teaching us in conflict? So filled wells and what God might be teaching us in conflict. So King Abimelech asks Isaac to leave, right? He says, "You're too powerful for us." I think this king sees the dynamics and understands rising tensions, that he's very perceptive. Isaac's wells are filled, and the life-giving water, the most important part that is needed to sustain the household, is no longer available. And Isaac responds, as the children's story said, he doesn't argue, he goes. He moves his household, he follows his father Abraham's steps, and his household digs, discovers well at an older well, digs another well in that same area, is claimed by shepherds, and Isaac calls this well Esek, right? The Hebrew word for contention or dispute. And so he moves, as it was read, he digs that second well, it's again claimed, and that well is called Sitna, which means enmity or opposition. I really like how the names of these wells in the story signal an escalation of conflict, from contention to opposition. And as the children's story brought out, digging of wells is hard work. Has anyone here dug a well? Anyone? There's a little nod in the back. I have not. We dug a fence post hole this fall. I didn't actually dig it. I watched it, and that was hard work. I did redig some of our garden beds and maybe got a foot and a half down. That is, you know, not very far. And, you know, my lower back is aching, and it takes a lot of time. And I think, actually, that makes digging wells really a great metaphor for conflict. That it is just, conflict is hard on people, and you struggle in it. And Isaac had those two wells that were claimed by others. And the story says Isaac is accommodating and he moves, and I wondered, you know, did he try not to go too far afield, stay in the area his father had stayed in? But he does move and the conflict continues. But finally there's that third well, right? That third move, the well. And Isaac calls the place Rehoboth, which means enlargement. For God has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. So in this part of the story, God helps Isaac move from that contention and opposition to enlargement. He passes through two sites of conflict, tough conflict, before finding a place of inclusion. And so what do we learn from this? So to help think about this part, I'm going to also take you back to Saskatchewan and to a place that's pictured behind me here. It's a place called Stony Knoll. It is located in the rural municipality of Laird in Saskatchewan, not too far from Rostern, about an hour and a half north of Saskatoon, which might be a bigger landmark to hold on to. And it's lovely farmland, and it's close to the North Saskatchewan River. And it's an area where some of my Neufeld relatives settled in the late 1890s. I won't take you back to their settling, and I'll note that, you know, 1890s is a little later than here when people were settling here. But it was a time, so I'm going to take you actually to 1976, so not a little bit ago, but not so long ago. And in 1976, a car full of young Indigenous men visited farms in this area and told the farmers and the people in the area that they were on young Chippewayan land, and they best take good care of it, because they were coming back. And at least one so-called Mennonite pacifist farmer retorted, "Over my dead body." So here was the first well, Isak, contention. It suddenly became clear to the Mennonites in the area that there was a dispute over the land they were farming, their land. And actually, it was a grievance that was 100 years old for the young Chippewayan band. But it was new for the Mennonites in the area. The farmers were afraid, they were angry, and they were sure they were in the right. They had legal title. And when the Canadian Mennonite Church's Native Ministries office decided they were actually going to fund research in the area to find out about whether the background on this claim, a group of 18 farmers wrote a letter in protest saying, and I'm going to quote, "We are not in agreement with Native Ministries in engaging and financing the services of researchers in land claims for this area. Furthermore, we will oppose any land claim action brought forth by the Indians." End quote. So given the threat to their livelihoods, they wanted the matter dealt with in the courts and certainly not by the church. And indeed, the research got done and revealed the claim was justified. The land in Laird had been a reserve. It had shifted for settlement by immigrants by the government under dubious circumstances, which had broken treaty law. So it was before they had arrived. And so for more than two decades after 1976, the metaphorical wells of contention and opposition were visited. As Laird and settler communities became aware of the claim, they struggled with how to respond. There was fear, there was opposition. There's actually a lovely short film called Reserve 107, and maybe some of you have seen it. It's actually the film from which this picture is taken. And it offers a bit of an overview of the history and then a very uplifting picture of the relationships that very slowly developed between the settlers in Laird and the descendants of the young Chippewayan band. It really did take several decades of struggle. And now, the conflict for the young Chippewayan is not yet over, but they're working together with the people from the area on the land claim. So it's quite transformed. In 2006, Mennonites, Lutherans, and others in the area actually came together with the young Chippewayan descendants and some other elders. And after, you know, so this is 30 years after the first meeting of contention, they had a joint ceremony that recognized the young Chippewayan and began educating the settlers about the treaties and about the historical significance of Stony Knoll. So to go back to my question, why conflict in that story of Isaac? You know, it's only through contention and opposition in my own story that these good settler ears were opened to hearing about the conflict. Only with that car visit in 1976 did the young Chippewayan story actually become audible. And maybe the same was true for Isaac. Maybe the conflict was important for more than we think. Which brings me to the closing part of Isaac's story and the return of King Abimelech and some of his advisors from Gerar. So they come to visit. So Isaac is newly settled in Rehoboth, and they come. And Isaac wonders, why have they come? And they respond, we saw clearly that the Lord was with you. So we said, there ought to be a sworn agreement between us and you. Let us make a treaty with you, or a covenant, that you will do us no harm, just as we did not harm you. But we always treated you well and sent you away peacefully, and now you are blessed by the Lord. I think this is such a fascinating interaction. Abimelech and others from Gerar see clearly God's presence, so they see God. They recognize God, and they come to make a treaty. So the version I read said treaty. The version we had this morning said covenant. They came together to covenant to commit to live peacefully. They establish this very formal, respectful relationship, which is quite different than the one based on the king's decree or edict at first. And the visitors conclude with a comment, and now you are blessed by the Lord. So what happens if we understand God's blessing not as property or prosperity, but blessing as rightful relationship, respectful relationships? Relationships which developed through difficult encounters at the well of conflict. How does that change how we might see our responsibilities as part of God's kingdom? And this is a question I wrestle with. What might that mean for me and how we think about the treaties today and the Haldimand Tract, as was noted? This is one of the questions that I'm wrestling with today. About 10 months ago, so much more recently, I and a group of my colleagues from the University of Waterloo, we sat in the basement of the Brubaker House, which is a museum on the University of Waterloo property on the north end. And it's an early Mennonite settler house, so the Brubaker House, and it's now a museum. And so there were a group of us sitting in the basement with friends and colleagues from the Waterloo Indigenous Students Center. And we were engaging together in an effort to explore the history of the area. We were there to tell them some Mennonite stories about how we came to the area, and then to think together about what we're learning now as we tell and re-examine our stories, with ears open to the history and dynamics of colonization. And so someone in our group told the story about the 1799 arrival of the first Mennonite immigrant who came from Pennsylvania, who went up to Niagara and saw that the Niagara district lacked fresh spring creeks. And so he went to what appears to be a Mississauga Anishinaabe camp and secured a guide. And he asked to be led to a place with fresh spring water, with good land and good timber. And the Anishinaabe guide led him to what apparently was a well-known and highly prized creek amongst the Mississauga and the Haudenosaunee. And it was here that the enterprising Mennonite located his homestead, with good spring water, good land, good timber, right? All very good. But not seeing the signs that it was land already well appreciated and lived on as part of a traditional hunting ground that was shared by the Anishinaabe and the Haudenosaunee and the neutral. And so we shared that story, and then there was a related story about early Mennonites on homesteads in the records considered themselves generous and open hosts, and they would allow Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee passersby to occasionally come in and stay for the night by the fire to keep warm. And I have to tell you, it was utterly uncomfortable for us in that exchange, because we were relaying our stories of Mennonite settling, of claiming land that at the same time dispossessed those for whom it was traditional hunting grounds. And we were sitting in the basement of a museum for our Mennonite settlers, which had a big stone fireplace. It's a beautiful fireplace on a very populated part of the Haldimand Tract. And there's little to no spoken recognition of Indigenous presence, past or present. I mean, we're working at changing that, but it wasn't in, if you watch the video, it's not in the video that was made quite a while ago. And so it was a moment where I could so plainly see, and more importantly, feel, the ways in which my story, so my good story, which I cherish, was now one-sided, inwardly facing, and a bit narrow. So what can we learn from Isaac's fears, from God's leading, from the wells of contention and opposition and finally enlargement? What can we learn from the note about God's blessing at the end of Isaac's story and the treaty? These are questions I can't answer, so I'm going to leave them with you, but I'll have one more story before I end, a short story. I recently mentioned this story that I just told you about us in the basement of the Brubaker house and Mennonites arriving in Waterloo to another Haudenosaunee colleague. And her gentle response to me echoed her learning from an elder's teachings, that the people like Mennonites who came were vulnerable. They had also lost part of themselves in colonization. She was taught that settlers also need to be helped. They need to help recover our better, more divine and moral selves. And in this exchange, she is gracious. She is the one who sees clearly that I, as a settler, who God may also be with, needs help recovering and am missing a part of the wholeness that God offers. There is a gift here that might possibly be reached in a respectful relationship. Yet I know it is there only if we go through the hard work of naming and addressing the displacement and dispossession. And in doing so, we may pass through the wells of contention and opposition. But that is along the way to reaching Rehoboth. Thank you.